There is a great deal in our local, national, and global history to lament, including the Civil War, the Spanish-American War, World Wars I and II, the Korean War, Vietnam War, the Iraq War, the war in Afghanistan, Guantanamo, Abu Ghraib, the Cuban embargo, Darfur, Lebanon, the Congo, Ku Klux Klan, police brutality, unnecessary recall elections. But we need to remember also that many good things have happened locally, nationally, and globally, along with many good people and groups which have made them happen. These include Abraham Lincoln, Susan B. Anthony, Julia Ward Howe, Eleanor Roosevelt, the United Nations, peace movements, Mahatma Gandhi, Nelson Mandela, Martin Luther King Jr., the Palestine Children's Relief Fund, Women's International League for Peace and Justice, alternative energy, fair-traded food items, the Kent Farmers Market and organically grown food, Earth Day, Kent Portage Park's new bike trail from Crane Avenue to Towner's Woods, the Kent UU service auction, Kent UU Social Justice Committee, the Portage Coalition for Sanctuary, County Clothing Center, Kent Community Services, Kent Environmental Council. As Theodore Parker told us over a century ago, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. Come, let us worship together.
The words to our covenant are printed in your order of service. We affirm that each life has brilliance, and when joined with others in loving community, has the power to transform. We pledge ourselves and our resources to this journey. This covenant inspires and challenges us to dwell together in right relationship. We promise to extend hospitality, nurture community for all ages, encourage spiritual growth, honor our diversity, and practice kindness. Diana Van Winkle, our Director of Religious Education, and several youth from our congregation will lead the time for all ages this morning.
Good morning. You see behind me part of the group of individuals who went to Washington, D.C. last week with the Tent of Hope that was created with most of the youth and from the support, generous support of many, many of the members of this congregation. They had quite an experience in D.C. As our tent that we created here at the church was raised on the Mall along with many other tents and will travel to Darfur to become housing. So I'm going to ask them to speak a little bit about their experience, and as they speak, you will see some slides that will show our tent, the raising of our tent, and other tents in D.C.
And I'm representing our daughters since they aren't here today, so this is something that they wrote. Allison, who is 9, it was really fun saving Darfur and looking at all of the tents and going to the Holocaust Museum, the National Museum of History. I hope we make a difference in Darfur. Caitlin, who is a middle schooler, I enjoyed going to Washington, D.C. because I got to learn more about Darfur. It was cool to see everyone from many different places come together for the Tents of Hope. There were some very beautiful ones. I also enjoyed the Holocaust Museum. It was very sad, but some of the exhibits were amazing. I think going to D.C. was a great experience for me.
I got to meet someone from Sudan, and he had enough money to come here and go to Kent State University. I like seeing all the different tents and the different designs, and I hope we made a big difference in Darfur.
I thought it was cool because when we were in D.C., the tents weren't just from Washington, D.C., and from Virginia and Maryland, but there were tents from all over Montana, Texas, and it was a really big showing of people from different places and from different religions. There were tents from churches and temples and schools, and it was really neat.
Okay, I really love the experience. I got to talk to a coalition group that's made up of people from ages 18 to 22, so they're pretty young. And they get to go over there, and they promote solar ovens and stuff like that. And I actually got to speak to a teenager from Darfur, which was really cool, and learn about their education and stuff here. So it was cool.
I just remember walking around, seeing all the tents, and how amazing all of them look. And I think that was the best part for me.
Eddie was there. He did get to experience the tents, and he helped put the tent up, which was no small feat with us working together as a group. And I think that they had a good time doing that. I want to thank you again for making this possible and being part of this. There are postcards downstairs.
There are postcards downstairs in Fessenden Hall. We are going to send those to the president to keep the plight of the people from Darfur on the horizon and encourage the president to pay attention to the experiences that they're having, the genocide. So I thank you all, and I'm very grateful that I got to experience the weekend with this crew and more. It was amazing. And we are hoping to maybe make a link on the website so you can see some more of these photos, as people have been asking. They're pretty amazing. Thank you.
And as the youth go to their classes, now we'll sing together. Outside the United Nations headquarters in New York City, there is a monument to Eleanor Roosevelt. Inscribed on the monument is this dedication: "Rather than curse the darkness, she lit a candle, and her light has warmed the world." After her husband died, President Harry Truman appointed Eleanor Roosevelt to serve as a United States delegate to the United Nations. In this capacity, Roosevelt was granted a seat on the United Nations Commission on Human Rights. Inspired by her world-renowned humanitarian commitment and by her capacity to render plain that which mattered most to ordinary people, the delegates to the commission selected Eleanor Roosevelt to be their chairperson. She embraced the work and led the way to create the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was adopted without dissent by the United Nations General Assembly on December 10, 1948. In her speech before the Assembly, Roosevelt proclaimed her hope that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights would be comparable in impact to the adoption of the French Declaration of the Rights of Man or to our own Bill of Rights. Nearly 60 years later, we can celebrate the impact the Universal Declaration of Human Rights has had worldwide, even as we acknowledge that much remains to be done before Roosevelt's dream will finally be realized. With houses of worship across the country, we lift up the vitally work of the United Nations this morning in its 60th anniversary year. Stories being one of the best ways I know to celebrate and to affirm, I offer you this one, which comes from our Unitarian Universalist United Nations office. It's a story of Jennifer Acora, who was getting ready for school one day when she was captured from her village in northern Uganda by rebel fighters. Akora was forced to march barefoot to a military base in Sudan, carrying supplies on her head. She was threatened with death if she cried. Though she was only 12 years old, she was given as a wife to a much older soldier. When she bore a son, she was forced to name him Kony after the hateful leaders of her captors, the Lord's Resistance Army. Though the truth is hard to acknowledge, Jennifer Okoro's story is all too common. The Lord's Resistance Army alone has captured tens of thousands of children over these last two decades of war, nearly a third of them girls. Child soldiers face double tragedy. Not only are they victimized by the army, they are also forced to commit crimes against others, sometimes against their former neighbors, and even sometimes against their own family members. Child soldiers who are able to flee are thus often shunned by their families for the terrible things that they have done. For the girls who escape with children, options are few. Most seek refuge in the crowded, security-protected refugee camps. That is where Jennifer Okora went when she was able to escape after 7 years in captivity. Feeling isolated and misunderstood in the camp, she was thinking about rejoining the Lord's Resistance Army. Her parents had been killed, her former neighbors didn't trust her, and she was haunted by memories. But then she heard about a meeting. A researcher from the United States, Jessica Lenz, was working in the refugee camp to learn about the needs of former child soldiers. Okora decided to attend the meeting, as did three other young women that she had known in captivity, Millie Alma, Nydia Chang, and Sarah Ayero. The four found a fast bond, and with the help of Lenz, decided to start their own non-governmental organization, which they call Empowering Hands. Only 3 years later, Empowering Hands is made up of 30 women, all under the age of 30. Together, they organize village discussions, raise awareness about child abductions through musicals and dramatic performances, and provide direct support to former child soldiers. Already, they have helped over 1,000 young people begin to reclaim their lives. With financial assistance from UNICEF, the United Nations Children Fund, and from Quaker Peace and Social Witness, Empowering Hands is able to give out small business loans, provide peer counseling to former child soldiers, and award scholarships to help young people go back to school. Last year, Glamour magazine awarded Empowering Hands their Women of the Year award. In doing so, they brought even greater international attention to the good work of these courageous young people. From the interviews of the magazine's reporter, I bring you one more story of hope. Maureen Akello was just 16 and 6 months pregnant when she fled the Lord's Resistance Army during a firefight between the rebels and the Ugandan army. Kidnapped nearly a year earlier, she'd been forced to abduct a neighbor, and her village did not forgive her. She found the stigma so painful that, like Akora, she considered rejoining her captors. Thankfully, Akella discovered Empowering Hands first. She threw herself into their activities, and with the small stipends the women get for their work in the camps, she saved enough money to return to school. Smart and determined, she soon learned to speak fluent English. Today, at 18 years old, she's Empowering Hands' secretary and de facto spokesperson. She's so joyful and charismatic that it's hard to believe she was once afraid to speak. Surrounded by her colleagues, many holding small children in their arms, she breaks into a radiant smile. Now I am free. It would be understandable if these young women decided to despair and curse the darkness, but instead, they have chosen to light many candles. We celebrate their work for dignity and justice today, grateful for the flames of hope they hold aloft. In hearing their stories, we are reminded that protecting human rights is everyone's work. These young women were not educated or authorized to work for human rights by any organization or institution. Their education came instead from the indignities of their own experience. Their authorization came from their willingness to serve. What is true of them is also true of us. We can draw upon our experiences to find compassion for those who suffer indignities and injustices. And if we choose to join hands and hearts in the struggle for a new way, we can do so knowing that our willingness is the only authorization that we need. Whether or not we ever have the opportunity to work in refugee camps or to assist with sustainable development efforts in the poorest corners of the world, each of us has the opportunity to respond with courage to the struggles that capture our attention in the daily movements of our lives. These are the words of Eleanor Roosevelt. Where, after all, do human rights begin? In small places, close to home, so close and so small they cannot be seen on any maps of the world. Yet they are the world of the individual person, the neighborhood he lives in, the school or college she attends, the factory, farm, or office where he works. Such are the places where every man, woman, and child seeks equal justice, equal opportunity, equal dignity without discrimination. Unless these rights have meaning there, they have little meaning anywhere. Without concerted citizen action to uphold them close to home, we shall look in vain for progress in the larger world. I interpret this statement as encouragement to live where we are planted. Our computers and televisions bring us news from every corner of the globe. Everywhere there is a troubling tale to tell. Each nation has its own nightmares, and often we are asked to respond. Amnesty International asks us to give money. This church asks us to paint a tent for hope and sign a postcard for the people of Darfur. This is important. We share one world and a responsibility to care for one another and the planet that we share. I believe that our fate truly is interwoven. I believe that we have an obligation to defend for others the rights that we claim for ourselves. We are called to care about people we do not know and will never meet, and to do what we can to help bring about a better world. One of the things that we can do right now to help support the creation of a safer, saner, more just world is to support the work of the United Nations. The UN was created with the understanding that no one nation can or should bear the burden for security around the globe. Working with the United Nations, our nation shares the responsibility for international security with 191 other countries. Right now, the UN has over 100,000 peacekeepers deployed around the world. On our own, our country could have no hope of responding at this scale. The nations need one another. But unfortunately, our government has failed to make good on our commitment to the community of nations. The United States is currently $2.8 billion behind in our dues to the UN. Payment of these dues is not a voluntary commitment. Rather, it's an obligation negotiated and agreed to by our government. We can do our part by calling or writing or emailing our elected officials and asking them to make this right, reminding them we bear a responsibility to be good global citizens. And at the same time, it's important that we remember to live where we are planted. My home is in Northeast Ohio, and so I must live in Northeast Ohio. This is where I can join hand to hand and heart to heart with my neighbors. This is where I can share my ideas, my energy, my passion with people who will receive what I have to give. This is where I can really make a difference. This is where you can really make a difference. We must live where we are planted. By sinking our roots in the place that we live, we are fed, nurtured, and sustained, not only by community, but also by place. We all need to be rooted, especially when the storms come. I was reminded this week of a passage from one of my favorite authors who writes in her essay, Small Wonder, about what keeps her hope and faith alive when the trials and storms come threatening. I close with these words from Barbara Kingsolver. In my darkest times, I have to walk, sometimes alone, in green places. Other people must share this ritual. For some, I suppose it must be a path through a particular set of city streets, a comforting architecture. For me, it's the need to stare at moving water until my mind comes to rest on nothing at all. Then I can go home. I can clear the brush from a neglected part of the garden, working slowly until it comes to me that here is one small place I can make right for my family. I can plant something as an act of faith in time itself, a vow that we will, sure enough, have a fall and winter this year to be followed again by spring. This is not an end in itself, but a beginning. I work until my mind can run a little further on its tether, tugging at this central pole of my sadness, forgetting it for a minute or two while pondering a school meeting next week, the watershed conservation project our neighborhood has undertaken, the farmers market it organized last year. The good that becomes possible when a small group of thoughtful citizens commit themselves to it. And indeed, as Margaret Mead said, that is the only thing that ever really does add up to change. Small change, small wonders. These are the currency of my endurance and ultimately of my life. It's a workable economy. Political urgencies come and go, but it's a fair enough vocation to strike one match against another after the dark isolation when spectacular arrogance rules the day and tries to force hope into hiding. It seems to me that there is still so much to say that I had better raise up a yell across the fence. I have stories to tell of things that I believe in. A persistent river, a forest on the edge of night, the religion inside a seed, the startle of wing beats when a spark of red life flies against all reason out of the darkness. I'd like to speak of small wonders and the possibility of taking heart. For all of us, may it be so. The blessing of truth be upon us, the power of love direct us and sustain us, and may the peace of this community preserve our going out and our coming in from this time forth until we meet again. Go in peace.